Thank you for the introduction. My name is Chun Zhao. I'm from Purdue University. I'm working with Dr. Brad Jor and Dr. Jim Camaretto. And I'm really honored to be here to present one of my PhD projects on nitrogen mineralization in Indiana soils. As we all know, there are three main sources of nitrogen for crops: chemical nitrogen fertilizer, organic fertilizer nitrogen, and the soil supply nitrogen. Many studies have found soil nitrogen can supply 20 to 80% of corn nitrogen needs. However, most of the research only focused on the A horizon, although the subsoils can contribute 20 to 60% of the mineralized nitrogen. So, the mineralized nitrogen of surface soil and the subsoils becomes the most important factor determining the fertilizer nitrogen rate. Many methods have been developed to predict the nitrogen mineralization. However, so far, no single method has been widely accepted that can accurately quantify the soil nitrogen mineralization. And because the soil mineralization process is a dynamic process that's driven by many factors, such as water content, temperature, carbon input, and cropping systems, and so on. So it is not reasonable to expect one single soil test method that can predict mineralizable nitrogen from 1 year to the next. So the objectives of the objectives of my research was to compare the soil nitrogen mineralization potential measured in the lab with the field estimates of soil supplying nitrogen in 7 Indiana soils to determine the potential impact of subsoil nitrogen contributions to potentially mineralizable nitrogen, and to assess the relationship between laboratory soil mineralizable nitrogen and several quick nitrogen indices of nitrogen availability. So soils were collected from 7 sites all over Indiana, and some selected soil properties was shown in this table. So soils from Acre and DPEC have the highest organic matter content, and generally the organic matter content decreased with depth. Subsoils from CPEC has the lowest has a lower pH value of 5.5, and soils from DPEC has a higher clay content, and the soils from the southwest PEC is the most sandy soil. So this research includes 2 components. One is the laboratory incubation, and the other is field estimate. So first, I want to talk about the laboratory incubation. I used a static incubation method because from a previous study I did, I compared the static incubation method and the Stanford Smith incubation method with the greenhouse soil supply nitrogen. And from our result, we got the static incubation method was better correlated to the greenhouse soil supply nitrogen. So we think this method is easier and worked. So we used this for this study. And after soils were taken back to the lab, they were air dried and sieved. And soils were placed in centrifuge tubes, rewetted to moisture potential 10 bar, and incubate them under 25 degrees C. At week 0, 2, 4, 8, 12, and 16, soils were analyzed for inorganic nitrogen after shaking with 50 mL 1 molar KCl for an hour. The data collected were fitted into a first-order model, and the equation is shown here. So this equation is used to predict the mineralizable nitrogen and the mineralization rate constant. The result is shown here. So generally, the mineralizable nitrogen and the rate constant decreased with depth. The K values varied among different soils, and the southwest pack soil had the lowest K value, and which is also the most sandy one. The relative contributions from the top soil was indicated in the last column. After averaged among the seven soils, we can see the surface only contributed about 40% of the total mineralizable nitrogen. And next is to compare the laboratory mineralizable nitrogen with the field observations. So the field estimates of soil nitrogen supplying capacity were predicted from grain yield using a harvest index of 35% after subtracting of the starter fertilizer. And we assume the starter fertilizer use efficiency was 100%. So this graph shows the relationship between the laboratory mineralizable nitrogen and the field soil nitrogen supply. So the blue dots here is the laboratory mineralizable nitrogen from the top layer, and the red dots is the sum of the all layers. So from this graph, we can also see the top layer only contributes about 40% of the mineralizable nitrogen. And the horizontal arrow bars here are the standard deviations of triple case measurements of laboratory mineralizable nitrogen. And the vertical arrow bars are from the 3 years observations in the field. So as we can see, the variability in soil nitrogen supply measured in the field is much greater than the variability measured in the lab. And weather most likely is a factor that contributes to these variations. And it obviously that there isn't a line that we can draw for this relationship. So the relationship between laboratory soil nitrogen mineralization estimates and the soil nitrogen supply in the field is weak or even non-existent. These are the yield response curve of the same field from 2006 to 2008. UAN was the nitrogen source, and it was injected. So the nitrogen fertilizer loss was likely minimal because there no ponding occurred after fertilizer application. However, the fertilizer nitrogen rate needed to maximize yield varied from year to year, even in the same field, with values from 152 kilograms nitrogen per hectare to 278 kilograms nitrogen per hectare. But the total nitrogen supply needed to maximize the yield is a constant. So the variations in the fertilizer nitrogen requirement comes from the variations in the soil supply nitrogen. And the variations in soil supply nitrogen is driven by weather factors such as rainfall and temperature. And next, I compared the laboratory incubation methods with some quick nitrogen indices to predict nitrogen mineralization. And those tests include Illinois soil nitrogen test, anaerobic nitrogen mineralization, CO2 flush, and hot KCl extraction. And as we can see from these graphs, so the Illinois soil nitrogen test and the hot KCl extractable nitrogen showed the most promise to predict the laboratory mineralizable nitrogen. Although the anaerobic nitrogen had a higher R-square value, so it was better correlated to the laboratory mineralizable nitrogen, but it takes a longer time, about like 7 days. And the CO2 flush with a lower R-square value is it was not well correlated. And none of these indices can be used to predict the mineralization rate constant. So in summary, soil mineralizable nitrogen measured in the lab generally decreased with depth. The surface soil contributes about 40% of the total mineralizable nitrogen. Although there were three indices, Illinois soil nitrogen test, anaerobic nitrogen, and hot KCl extractable nitrogen that were considered reasonable indicators of mineralizable nitrogen, but the soil mineralizable nitrogen measured in the lab was not well correlated to the field estimates. So which tells us, although there were so many methods as a quick and easy test developed to predict the nitrogen mineralization, but the nitrogen mineralization predicted in the lab was not correlated to that estimate from the field. So next, what we're going to do is to incorporate soil surface and the subsurface nitrogen mineralization potentials into a nitrogen transformation and loss model driven by temperature, precipitation, and landscape positions. And then we compare the results from this model to some field data to see if this can give us some promise. And that's it. Thank you.
Questions? You have about 3 or 4 minutes for questions.
Yes.
Did you try to compare or look at the soil moisture levels in the subsoil versus the topsoil?
Because in the lab we all adjusted to the 10th bar, so.
Right. But in the field, that's not what you have.
Yeah, I understand. But I think when we do the model, we will consider that factor, like the difference in temperature and difference in the water content from top and the subsoils.
Well, that's why I was wondering, because you didn't find very good correlation, but if you look at the rate of mineralization based on oxygen supply, which is related to your moisture level,
yes,
that might help.
Okay.
Did you use the same harvest index was that fairly uniform among the locations?
Yes, I think so. We use the same harvest index.
It was just to be conservative and to have a constant, so that's why we started fertilizer with 100% efficient, so we wouldn't be overestimating that supply.
I'm not sure I understood, maybe I missed it, but the indices that you compared to the laboratory?
Laboratory nitrogen mineralization.
So how did you compare them to the field then? Presumably they wouldn't be well correlated.
No, since the laboratory nitrogen mineralization would not correlate to the field, so that won't correlate it to the field, yeah.
Okay.
Another question? I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I noticed that you air dry your samples.
Yes.
What happened, do you think, if you had not air dried the samples? Your mineralization potentials or cave would have changed, or what do you think about those soils? Do you think it may have an effect?
I think that may have an effect because I read some literature that they said the disturbance of the soil may have an effect on the mineralization potential. Yeah.
I don't know, how did you control your water content in the lab? What water content did you use and how did you control that?
Oh, so actually first I just measure the water potential. So I add water to the soil and I just measure the weight weekly, so to keep that as a constant moisture level.
You think weekly is good enough? Did you try to measure water content to see changes?
I just adjust the water content always as 10th bar, so I didn't see the change of the moisture content on the mineralization potential. Yeah.
Any questions? Okay, no, thank you very much.
Thank you.